Welcome to the Stay Ready Real Estate Podcast, where we stay ready so you don't have to get ready. My name is Emeka, and I'll be interviewing a variety amount of professionals in the real estate industry to help you get 1% closer to your goal of buying your next real estate investment. My goal with this podcast is to show the world that regular people like you and me can buy real estate to build wealth. Today we have Donald. Donald has devoted the last 15 years managing the expansion of private equity-backed companies through the acquisition of companies in real estate. As an executive, he has led the investment in the acquisitions of companies with a total valuation of $1 billion across different assets and industry types. Prior to founding the Lindsay Capital Partners, Donald served as the Senior Director of Merger and Acquisitions for a private equity-backed company focused on managing the acquisitions for a leading healthcare platform. He previously served as a Director of Strategic Finance, leading a Fortune 100 business unit acquisition and real estate expansion efforts throughout the Southeast. After several years of rapid expansion, Donald led the operational diligence that results in the sale of a company to a Fortune 100 company. Prior to this, Donald served as an investment banker advising companies on optimal capital solutions and merger and acquisitions. Let's listen to Donald.
Yeah, so my name is Donald Lindsay. I'm the founder of Lindsay Capital Partners. It's a firm focused on acquiring multifamily properties throughout the Southeast. Currently, right now, me and my business partner are seeking properties in excess of 50 units or more, and we're looking for IRR returns of 14% plus, as well as cash on cash returns above
6%. Cool. Now you just drew some great big words right there. So can you explain a little bit more about what an IRR and how a cash on cash is calculated?
Yeah, so IRR is just really the return that you're getting per year, right? The average return you're getting per year for over the life of the investment. And so that includes both the cash that you're receiving in distributions, as well as when you actually sell the property, you, the investor, what you're going to get back as a distribution for selling the property for more than what you purchased it for. Cash on cash is what you receive while you wait until you actually sell the property. So for example, a lot of these syndication deals, you're getting a quarterly return distribution of 6% of what you've invested, right? So if you're investing $100, you're getting $6 back for a year or for that investment.
Oh, cool. That's great. And why real estate, man? Like you just said some sophisticated stuff. You're looking at, you know, big deals, 50 yeah. units plus. Where did this come from? Have you always, you know, were you in real estate full time out of, you know, college or from high school?
That was a great question. So I started off in the fancy world of private equity. And so in that world, really the focus is to buy another company to grow it, right? So in order to grow the company, you have an existing company, and then you bolt on additional companies. And then over time, when the company gets bigger, you eventually sell that to another investor. That was a great time. I mean, I learned so much on the modeling side, underwriting deals, in that world. But then one thing I realized was I didn't have control of my time, which is a big piece, right? Somebody else was responsible for my time. And for me, that was great when you're younger, but at some point you want to be able to buy back your time. And when I say buy back your time, what that really means is when, you know, your daughter's having a ballet recital, do you have the ability to say, oh, I'll be at the recital right away? Most instances you don't, right? Because your boss is the one that controls your time. And so for me, I was always looking for that opportunity where I would be able to have a little bit more control over my time. And so that's when I learned of, like, starting on the single family side of investing, right? And there it was great. I got some good distributions. I was able to acquire some single family homes, fix it up, and then eventually sell it. And I was able to buy back a little bit of the time, right? Some financial freedom there. But what I realized was single family homes, especially in the flipping side, has ups and downs, right? And for me, that wasn't enough, right? I needed something a little bit more stable where I could both build the generational wealth as well as still buy back my time. And that's where I came across multifamily investing, where I learned and actually went out and got a mentor. And my mentor taught me that, you know, in order to be able to transition out of corporate completely, multifamily is your best opportunity in that way. And so, you know, I dove in, everything, learning, reading all these podcasts, learning everything I could about multifamily. And that's where I'm at this point today. Yeah.
No, I love it. And was real estate and multifamily the only thing you looked at, or did you look at other things as well, like stocks or crypto or bonds?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, so the natural, especially coming out of college, the natural thing that you always do and you learn in college is about stocks and bonds. They actually focus more on stocks and bonds than they do on real estate, a lot of instances for finance majors. So I was all in on stocks. But then once again, you do not really, you feel like you don't control the investment as you do in real estate, right? You and your general partner team control the asset, control the opportunity of getting that 15% return over the next 5 years. When you invest in a stock, there's some guy in Colorado that you probably never have met is the one that's controlling the company, right? And controlling that stock, right? And so I feel like investing in equity, investing in stocks, you don't have as much control as you do when you invest in real estate.
No, I would agree 100%. And that's something that I was quite frankly never taught. Like right out of college, yeah, I was doing all this stuff on my own. And you said you got a mentor. Was that the first thing you did once you realized that you needed something more? Or did you try to do things alone outside of the single family?
Yeah, because if you think of it, like a lot of times, why do you need to take on more risk than you need to? Why don't you follow somebody else's path and they can tell you their mistakes, right? You can learn from all the mistakes that they have done so you don't have to repeat their mistakes. And that already gives you a leg up to other, you know, people who are just starting out and just trying everything on their own. So that's one thing I would highly recommend any like young or beginner multifamily investor to go out and get a mentor, whether it's joining a mentor program or seeking out another multifamily investor that's out there that you would like to emulate.
No, that's great. And how did you find your mentor?
Oh, for me, I did like the cold calling method. So I saw him on one of these podcasts and I was like, wow, his story is resonating with everything I'm saying, you know, transition from a great corporate career to full time in, you know, real estate where I can buy back my time. And so all those things were resonating with me every time he was speaking. So I was like, why don't I reach out directly to him? And one of the things also when reaching out to a mentor, especially in the real estate side, you yourself have to add value back to that person, right? Like you going out to say, oh, can you mentor me? Right? Like you have to see what you can add value to that person and find ways that you can add value to that person. And they're more likely to, you know, reach back out and say, oh, yeah, let's talk about it. And so in my eyes, when I reached out, I said, okay, I have up time. And if you're willing, if you need somebody to like look for some deals for you, do some research for you, I'm willing to do that as well. Eventually he didn't need that, but that opened up the door, right? Like I'm adding value to him. And so since I'm adding value to him, he's more interested in like seeking out, oh, this person's serious, right? Like you really want to show and convey that you're serious about this business.
No, I love that. And that makes perfect sense. And that's one thing that kind of took me a little bit longer to get into.
Yeah.
Because like I couldn't figure out what my value was. And for those listening who don't really know what their value is, how can they determine what their value was? How did you determine what your value was to bring to your mentor?
I would say like always look at your skill sets, right? I mean, if you have a construction background, maybe you can help if he's acquiring a property, maybe you can help him maybe on a property management side. Me, I come back from the private equity world and there your head's in on modeling, right? Doing the underwriting. So my skill sets of underwriting, I felt like I could convey that, like I can help you with modeling if you need it, right? Like, so look to the skill sets that you have already. Don't make up skill sets, right? Like if you're not good at modeling, don't pretend that you're good at modeling. Find your skill sets. And those same skill sets also translate to being a general partner on a team as well, right? Like if you're being part of a general partner team, you will yourself want to figure out like what skill set do you have and what value can you add to that general partner team, right? Don't make up a skill set. Oh, I'm good at talking to investors. And you whenever you speak to investors, you get nervous and shaking. And no, stick to what you're good at, right? And what value you can add to that investor team is the skill set and the way that you actually go about actually adding value to both mentorship as well as being part of a general partner team.
No, that's amazing. Can you tell the audience a little bit about your portfolio?
Yeah, so like I was saying, I started off on the single family side, and I flipped over around 5 to 6 properties over that time period, which I'm holding some of those assets now. And then right now I'm invested in around 300 units in the Arkansas market. And so we're now looking to now expand in the Southeast now. And so we're looking in Orlando markets, Central Florida markets, North Florida, Georgia, and then obviously in the Carolinas across to Arkansas to expand the portfolio. Oh. Acquire 200 units by the end of this year.
Is there any specific deal that you just love the most that you want to kind of dig deep into?
Yeah. So the deal that I love the most, which one that I also invested as an LP on, was that deal was in Arkansas, and it was actually an assumable loan, right? So during that time, obviously now interest rates in excess of 6%. Well, this deal, the loan was 3%. And the deal was the person that was selling the asset was actually the developer. And the developer now was looking to get it off their hands, get it off their balance sheet to sell it off. And so they were looking, as long as they got the profit that they were seeking, they were willing to, you know, sell it for that price. And so we were able to actually acquire that property, and it was an assumed loan at 3% interest rate, which at this time is not anywhere near close to where it's at now, right? And so that was the opportunity. And on top of it, it was a newer build construction as well. And the market, if you look at the dynamics around the market, which is so important for real estate, was if you look at the median income in that market, it was about 100,000 plus for the median income. And then another thing that was very interesting and very important in that market was the diversification of the employer base, right? We had, because it was Northern Arkansas, we had Walmart, but not just like the local Walmart, but the corporate Walmart, as well as additional technology companies that were in that market. So it had a lot of good economics that we were looking for in that market.
Oh, no, that's great. And can you explain what an assumable loan is?
Well, yeah. So like, for example, if you're selling a single family home, right? And in order to acquire that property, right, the person that's selling the property already has an existing loan, right? And so in order to, so for that seller, it comes along, he sells the property, and then instead of him paying down that mortgage, you come in as the buyer and you assume that loan, meaning you continue to pay the interest rates that the old seller is already paying. And so you assume the loan and you continue to make payments as if like you are the person that originally took out the loan.
That's a steal, in my opinion.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a highway robbery. And at the end of the day, it's still a win-win situation because they wouldn't have let you did that unless it was somewhat of a benefit for them as well. So you exactly. help them while also, you know, taking advantage of a 3% loan. And that's amazing. And, you know, once I left college, all this stuff was foreign to me whenever I got into it. You got a mentor. You learned the ropes after you did your single family homes. And now you're hooked. You're trying to get 200 units this year. What is going to be the way you get to your 200 units?
Oh, that's a great question. Like for us is really creating a pipeline of deals, right? Like if you just sit there waiting for the brokers, obviously the brokers have their, you know, special clients that they go to, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to go out and build relationships with those brokers, right? And how do you build a relationship with those brokers? You have to be on the ground in that market, right? Like if you have existing brokers in the market that you're seeking, you need to go out, build relationships. And relationships means maybe I take the broker out for lunch and then we talk through our acquisition strategy in that market, right? Like this is what we're looking for. This is a profile. And we also want to prove to them that once the deal comes and you send it to us, we will close, right? That's That's all a broker is really concerned about. Will you be able to close? Right? And if you can show that, and if you're a newer investor, that's where you also try to have a good GP team that can compensate for you. Right? Like you may have somebody a little bit more senior in your GP team that can compensate and have that good track record to show the broker that you as a team can close. Right? That's very important. Number two thing that we're also doing is we're on the ground and figuring out what are the targets in that market and trying to put together a campaign to outreach directly to the landlords, right? And so what that means is you could either do email or mailers directly to those landlords. Obviously, we know that's less effective, right? So like if you send out 100, you may get one response, right? Or maybe you send out 100 and you get 5 responses, but one actually results in a deal. So obviously, it's a game of numbers and you have to continue to do the outreach. And same thing with brokers, continue to outreach to brokers and build that relationship with those brokers in the market. And that's what we're doing in the markets that we're seeking deals in.
I love it. And whenever I got into this space, I feel like I debunked a lot of myths that I didn't know. You have to have a lot of money to invest in real estate.
Yeah.
Or you have to be a real estate agent in order to invest in real estate. So what has been a couple of more myths that you've debunked since getting into this multifamily space?
I will say that's the biggest one, right? Like, and that's the reason why a lot of people are afraid to make that shift from single family to multifamily, right? Because they see the large numbers. But the reality is when you look at like smaller multifamily and you look at some of the bigger deals in multifamily, you'll see that over time that a lot of those deals, it takes the same amount of effort to close a smaller multifamily as well as one of the bigger deals, right? And so that was definitely a big myth in my head. And that was something that probably I would have even started earlier, knowing that what I know now, that like the effort level is pretty similar on small multifamily compared to bigger multifamily deals. And then another big myth that I, you know, that you have to be the jack of all trades, right? Like, oh, you got to have the construction background. You got to also be the underwriter and modeler. Then you got to be suave to be the, you know, the person to outreach to investors, right? Like you got to be this perfect person. That's not the case at all. What you have to be is know your skill set, know, you know, what you're good at. I'm not saying not to build these other skill sets, because while you're, they put you that like your skill set is good at investor relations, right? Like while you're doing investor relations, of course you should be involved in some of the other items, but you need to know your skill set and have other GP members that complement your skill sets. And that's a big myth, right? Like a lot of investors are on the sideline, like I can't do that because I can't do all of the above. Well, no. You need to have a team that complements your skill sets. And that was, to be honest, the biggest myth that I debusted during this time period. Yeah.
No, I laugh when you said that because I own a single family rental out in Kansas and I own a 10 unit property here in Lakeland, Florida. Yeah. And I spend more time and energy on my single family unit than my 10 unit here. And
Exactly.
And there's a variety of reasons, right? And you kind of headed towards it already, is because I have a team here. So I don't have to do everything, right? Yeah. And before I truly started understanding how multifamily worked, I thought I had to underwrite. I thought I had to reach out to brokers. I thought I had to do the lunches. Like,
exactly.
That's stuff you don't really understand unless you have a mentor, which you already said that's a key thing to get into, which I love. So how did you pick your markets, right? You're in Miami, Florida, or it's South Florida.
Yeah.
And now you just said that you're looking for, you know, 50 plus units in all these different markets. Why those specific ones?
Well, yeah. So like one of the biggest things is we're looking at drivers of rent growth, right? And what one of the main drivers is population movements or population migrations into those communities. And we know like the Southeast has continued to benefit from movement from New York, like these high tax states like New York and California. And as people move away from those places, they're moving to the Southeast, where it's a lot more affordable. And but we know that with that increased demand, right, increased demand is a great carrot stick for increased rent growth over time, right? So you want to be in markets that are not dying, right? And we know that markets like Orlando have seen some of the best rent growth numbers over the last decade. We know Tampa as well. And we know Miami and Jacksonville as well. And we know that because people that are that lived in New York have migrated down, especially after 2020 during COVID time, is when that, a lot of that migration accelerated. And so that's how we really choose our markets. We're looking at population growths in these MSAs. And we know that the MSAs in the Southeast, particularly Tampa, Orlando, Atlanta, these are markets that have seen that population growth. Thus, we would expect rent growth over time to continue to increase because demand has continued to outpace supply in those markets.
When I started, you know, getting into real estate in general with single family homes, you know, I did it the classic way, you know, read the books, you know, listen to the podcast, and then go forth and go forth. One of the biggest mistakes I did was I did everything alone. Yeah. Saying that, I still like to say I have no regrets because unless I did that, I wouldn't be where I am today.
Yeah, of course.
With the knowledge that you have now, if you can go back to when you started to get into real estate, what would you do differently?
Well, I mean, it's the number one thing that you mentioned earlier. It's like, because you know that the deal sizes are, right, like a smaller deal and a bigger deal takes the same amount of effort, right? I would have seeked out bigger deals earlier, knowing that, right? Like, right on, right? I probably would have skipped single family and went right into multifamily, to be completely honest, right? And then from there, I would have seeked out a mentor even earlier, right? As soon as I got in, I would have said, let's go multifamily, seek out a mentor, and then just dive right in and seek out bigger deals earlier. And I feel like that's probably the one thing that I would definitely improve, or I would recommend to anybody that's starting out, go in for those bigger deals. Obviously, you need a team, right? Like you want partners to compensate you or compensate your skill set. And then seek out those bigger deals right away, immediately.
Yeah, that's amazing. And you talked about, you know, the size of property that you're looking for and the areas that you're looking for. But one thing you haven't talked about is your strategy. Are you looking for properties that cash flow day one where there's not much to do it, such as an A-class property? Are you looking for value add, or is there something new that you're doing?
Well, yeah, we're looking for value add property deals in these markets, right? So like we're looking, because we're seeking returns in excess of 14%, value add is really what provides those great returns in excess, right? Like when you buy a class A property, those properties typically are like buying a bond, right? Like the returns are a lot less because the risk is a lot less, right? These are higher end markets, right? It's very stable, right? And so you're getting most of your appreciation through price appreciation. For us, we wanna try to seek out properties where we can able to push rents by after we are able to add some type of value add to that property. And so that's where we, or the, you know, the area that we're fishing in for now. And we feel like we're gonna have a lot of, more of those opportunities going forward.
And how are you able to determine what properties need the value add? Because I know it's more than just pushing rents. So what are the little indicators that, you know, grabs your eye? Like, okay, that's the property that we need to do so we can get 14 or beyond that IRR.
Yeah, so then, so yeah, there's a couple variables. So obviously looking at rent, how that, so if we're looking at an area, right, an area of like a subset of Atlanta, and then we're seeing rent for that property is at $1,500 and then market rent is close to $1,800. We want to figure out why is that property already selling, especially if it's a similar build and similar year built, right? And so we'll dive in on that. And a lot of the things that you usually see is that it's mismanagement, right? They've allowed a good asset to deteriorate, both external and internal, like inside the property. And so those are the big deals that we're really trying to seek is properties that are mismanaged, but are still in a good area where we could actually, after increasing the value, doing some light maintenance that after that, that will actually come up to the value of similar properties, and we can be able to increase rents to similar levels, right? But if it's a property that's not being maintained, but rent levels are not moving anywhere, right? And the neighborhood, the property could be a class B or C, but it's in a class D neighborhood. Those are not deals that we're trying to seek, right? Because we know that in the long run, us providing a lot of value to that property, still not going to allow us to push rents. And a lot of the tenants probably still are not going to even want, even after, you know, fixing the property up, whether they're going to even want to come to that property.
People often say real estate is risky.
Yeah.
What has been the riskiest thing or the craziest thing that you've experienced where someone might think that, okay, if that happened to me, I'd probably get out. Has that ever happened to you? Right? Has that happened to you?
That the riskiest part for real estate is, and this is like the old adage of a lot of people are analyzing on whether when you're getting started or when you're seeking a deal, do you build up an investor base prior to getting the deal, right? Or do you get the deal and then everybody comes like little ants to the sugar? What we've learned over time is building an investor base and getting them understanding of our strategy. So once a deal is ready, they're able to come and say, oh, we know Donald, this is his strategy. This is, they've been able to execute deals in the past. So we'll invest with them. Because without that, if you just have the deal and then you sign on the PSA, it doesn't always work where you just say, oh, everybody, now can you invest in my deal? And everybody comes in and invests in the deal. Because that's massive amount of risk, right? You're on the hook of this deal, but then you haven't built out an investor base that's willing to actually invest in the deal. So for us, our strategy is to focus on building that investor base, telling them our strategy, and showing what we've executed on. And then once we have a deal, they're more likely to invest in that deal because they know our strategy, they know how we look at deals, and they know like our team, like what our team base is all about.
Yeah. That's amazing. And you just hit it right on the point, the fact that, you know, you focus on your investors and having your investors understand how you do things so it can be the best investment for them. Because they do have other options.
Exactly. A lot of these are credit investors. Like you said, I mean, they can invest in a hedge fund. They can invest in private equity. They can invest in coins. I mean, they can invest in horses. They have so many opportunities. So you mm-hmm. want to show them like the value add on why real estate should be a portion of your portfolio and why you should be investing with us, the general partners team, for this opportunity. Yep.
That's great. And you said that the control that the GPs have of a deal is one of the reasons that you chose real estate specifically. Yep. What has been the biggest benefit of real estate as well compared to, let's say, stocks and bonds?
Well, yeah, the biggest thing for real estate is the leverage, right? Right? Your minimal investment, but high returns. Right. But then obviously we know that comes with risk. And so you want to try to limit that risk. That's like one of the biggest things that I've learned. And then also with real estate, right, the depreciation impact, right, the ability to be able to get a tax shield with real estate. And so in my eyes, that is one of the big benefits in comparison to a lot of these other alternative investments that are out there, right, because of that depreciation ability, right? Because a lot of people who are willing to, or wanting to come into real estate are higher earners, right? And they're trying to find out investments where they can gain a return, as well as be able to shield some of that legally through a tax shield. And real estate is able to do that for you, to give both appreciation as well as some tax shield through depreciation. And so that's the big selling point for me as a GP. And I would say that's probably the selling point for most GPs. Yeah.
No, I love it. I love it. And what's your ultimate goal with real estate? Of course, you want it to, you know, take over your W-2 income. But once that happens, are you going to be done investing? Do you have a bigger goal?
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, now we're saying for us over the long term is to acquire around $300 million in real estate over the next decade. That's our long-term goal. I mean, if we've, you know, come close to that or exceed it, we'll be more than happy. But that's our long-term goal, is to acquire at least over $300 million in real estate over the next decade.
Have a plan, right? Everyone says you got to write your vision board down, write your goals. So what is your plan?
I agree. And so that's why we're really focusing on that acquisition strategy of reaching out to the landlords in those select markets. That's one of our big pieces. And then one of the things that we're also doing and we're also looking at, which I would assume other GPs may be doing as well, is that we're also starting to look at loans that may be maturing, right? For landlords that are looking where their loans are about to mature, or reaching out to landlords that at this point have had enough, right? They're tired of the management of the property. They don't want to deal with that anymore. And so that's what we're really trying to seek out. And then number three, we're seeking out properties which are being mismanaged. And we feel like over the next at least 2 to 3 years, a lot of these landlords with their loans resetting over the next year or two, we will be able to seek out opportunities in those markets, and we'll be able to get to the number that we're trying to get. And that will actually provide a lot more opportunities. And one of the biggest things that we see a lot is investors are saying, oh, I'm on the sidelines. I'll wait for the market to come back, right? Like, I'll wait somehow. They'll be able to time it and wait for the market to come back. Well, I would tell a lot of those investors, you have to start now. As an LP, you need to invest now. You need to start that process of getting back in, because you cannot time the market. Just the same way you can't time equities, right? Equity markets, you cannot time the real estate market, right? You have to be constantly seeking out GPs that are constantly investing and looking for opportunities in all cycles of the market.
That's phenomenal. And what is your opinion of how the market's going to be in the next 3 years?
Well, yeah, I mean, I feel like at some point now we may be experiencing somewhat of a soft landing that everybody was skeptical about in the beginning. But I will expect by the end of this year, interest rates will come down, as you've already seen signs that the market is slowing. I know we had like the most recent report of inflation came in a little hot, but still, I would still expect the second half of this year where interest rates will come down. And I would expect the movement back into multifamily by the end of 2025, where a lot more investors will be coming back in. Because in the end of 2023, we saw deals where we were trying to actively invest in, where a lot of the capital markets were saying, oh, we're on the sidelines right now. We don't want to invest right now. We'll wait for the market to come back. And so I would say that by 2025, most of the market of multifamily should start resuming, and we should start seeing the same pace that we've seen before. But I would say in 2024, you're still going to see issues still raising capital for deals. And you're going to see a lot of the stronger syndicators or stronger real estate investors will be able to weather the next 6 to 7 months. And a lot of the other syndicators that may have over leveraged themselves or are seeing interest rates resets on some of their deals, you'll continue to see those deals fall apart, and you'll see a lot of those syndicators fall to the wayside. And you'll see the stronger syndicators will continue to come back at the end of this year, beginning 2025. And what that means for the market, it means that opportunities for the stronger syndicators, right? Some of these deals where you get calls from the banks, or you may get calls from these other syndicators where they just need another investor to take over the deal. And you'll start seeing more of those deals end of this year, beginning of next year. And so these are little things that we think where will create opportunities for us as stronger syndicators in the market to be able to acquire in the next 2 to 3 years.
Is there any specific indicators that you look for to kind of determine where we are in the market cycle? Because I hear so many different opinions of where we are in the market cycle. No one knows, but somehow someone always has a crystal ball.
Yeah, like, so if I knew the market cycle, let's just say I would be a Warren Buffett right now. But I agree with you that, like, a lot of people, like even some of the great syndicators or great real estate investors out there, they feel like they have a sense of where we are in the market cycle. But the reality is, if they knew, they would be in a way better position. And the reality is, I don't think anyone truly knows. You can only continue to look at deals and to see if it makes sense. Does it fit your investment criteria? Does it fit the IRR that you're seeking, the cash on cash returns you're seeking? And what is the team, if you're the LP, what team are you invested with, right? And that's how you have to continuously look at the deals and look less at the cycle, because you're not going to be able to predict the cycle.
No, I love it. And with that, we're going to move on to the next segment of the show where I ask everybody the same three questions. Question one, if you can recommend two books for the aspiring investor to read, what would they be?
So for me, it's like probably off the beaten path there, but I would say Warren Buffett has these shareholder letters, right? And I would think that a lot of investors, both on the real estate side, the equity side, and if you have a corporate job, right? Like, I would say that that would be the best book or letters to read, because Warren Buffett really highlights like ethics, right? Like when you're dealing with business, you need to be able to actually follow like an ethical code, right? And over the long run, that will supersede any other thing that you're doing, right? Like if you're only seeking out just being wealthy and you're willing to push people aside, not do the right thing, over the long term, you will fall and you will not make it in your business. And so Warren Buffett shows like the ethical code throughout the shareholder letters. Well, as well as you also see like how he took on investment strategies in different cycles of the market. And he's in every cycle of market that he's been in, even when the market is crashing or when the market has been frothy, he's been able to maintain his investment standard throughout that time period. Even when people are like, oh, your investment strategy is no longer viable. Well, what he did was he stuck to his investment strategy throughout those different cycles and told most people that, like similar to what we're thinking now in this market, that it's hard to predict the cycle. All you can continue to do is follow your investment criteria and continue to seek out the best deals in your market. And all of that is in his shareholder letters. So I would highly recommend everybody to read that.
You gotta give me one more book. Give me one more book to say.
Yeah, so another one that Joe Fearless, best ever. He is, for me, like if you are a person that's seeking out to go into real estate investment, read all of Joe Fearless's books, because he gives the foundation of the full process, right? On how to raise deal. Also, another big thing is, you know, building an internet presence or building a presence where people are able to put you as a thought leader. And he's very much giving you that strategy, as well as how to look at a real estate multifamily deal. So his book really encompasses a lot. And I would highly recommend that for any person that's starting out in multifamily, or if you're an LP trying to jump in as an LP investor and trying to figure out like the dynamics, I would highly recommend Joe Fearless's book. Best ever.
No, I love it. What has been the most impactful speech or lesson that has helped your real estate career today?
So for me, the most impactful, I would say, lessons that I've learned is I was listening to this podcast from Eric Thomas, who's like a highly, you know, motivational person. And so like when you're in these different cycles, right, like there is no real estate investor that's not going to face any form of a crisis. And so Eric Thomas's lessons really was highlighting how you should never give up, right? Like never give up is like the, and it's easy to say that, like, oh yeah, I'm never going to give up. You know, I work hard. Well, what he's saying is the only time he will lose is when he quits. And so that lesson is so valuable, because even when you invest in real estate, and even when times have been good, you have to continue to be able to keep to your investment strategy, not listen to the noise, right? And just keep on going. And so it's beyond, I guess, even just real estate investing. In any corporate career that you have, if you have a goal, don't give up. Instead, what you do is you spend your time figuring out like, oh, I made this mistake. How do I not make this mistake again? Or like, how do I overcome any challenges that I'm facing in order to reach my goal? And in our case, for real estate, that's how we think of it. We think it as never give up, and we'll continue to keep on chugging along, and we'll continue to find the best opportunities. And any mistakes we make, we learn from those mistakes and become even better investors.
I love it. And if you can have dinner with anyone, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
Well, yeah. So, like, I'm a big Buffett guy. So, I would say I would have with Warren Buffett just based on his knowledge on investments and just like his ethical code on how he manages his business. And for me, it would just be ask, like, how can I be just like him one day? You know, trillionaire.
Well, Donald, how can people reach out to you if they have questions or learn more about your business?
Yeah, you can either reach out to me on lindsaycapitalpartners.com or email me at donald@lindsaycapitalpartners.com.
Well, Donald, thank you so much for joining the show.
It's been a pleasure.
That was Donald, everybody. At the beginning of the podcast, I told you I'd give you 3 actionable steps that you can do today to get you 1% closer to your goal of buying your next real estate investment. Before then, please like, comment, and subscribe if you like this podcast. It means the world to me and it helps me make this podcast better. Step 1, watch or listen to Warren Buffett's shareholder meetings. He's very informative and he's a wealth of knowledge. Watching and listening to those can only be good for you and help you understand more of how the market works. Step 2, Donald dropped a lot of terms today. So come up with flashcards and get familiar with the common terminology that's done in real estate. The book, The Best Ever Apartment Syndication Book by Jill Fairless, gives a bunch of terms and definitions at the back of the book. And you can start from there. In step 3, look into the U-Haul migration reports. That is a great way to kind of determine where people are moving to and what markets that they see fit where they want to move. If a lot of people are moving to a market, that means there's a reason they're moving there. That's the job opportunity. It could be, you know, the natural resources there. There could be a variety of things, but if people are moving there, that means they need a place to stay, buy, or rent. Until next time, see you next Wednesday.